Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. If you didn't realise this week was the grand final of Outrageous Fortune, well, you must have been living under a rock. And with over 700,000 people tuning in to watch the last episode ever, it was a big finish for the series that's captured the hearts and minds of many a Kiwi. Robin Malcolm may be the most recognisable face of the series, but it's fair to say it would be quite literally nothing without creator and co-writer James Griffin, who joins us now for the post-match analysis. Well, James, thank you very much for joining us. Has it been a sad week for you?
Yeah, it has actually. Yeah, there's been a sequence of sad events. You know, writing the last storyline, you know, writing the last script, last day of shooting, rap party, so on and so forth. But this one, yeah, it's the I'd like to say closure, but it doesn't feel quite closed, but it's pretty closed.
How long ago did all that happen? I mean, the last script, the last storyline, the rap parties, because it's all been wrapped up largely for a while.
Yeah, we wrapped some months ago, and so in the last script, you know, we actually did deliver it just before we started shooting. So it was, you know, kind of January this year was when we stopped writing.
Aside from the wonderful cast and crew that you've been working with, it must be really hard to leave these characters behind. These are your babies.
Yeah, that is the one thing that I do miss is having those strange voices in your head and the pleasure of sitting down and writing them. You know, quite often writing is a fairly solitary struggle. But writing Outrageous Fortune scripts was a doddle, really, because they just spoke to you and said the naughty things that you couldn't really say.
So the characters have left your mind completely and they're not still lurking there, continuing their stories?
You kind of have to move on. Yeah. They did briefly revisit not so long ago because I had to write an extra scene for the museum exhibition, a 3D scene. So suddenly I was having to write these six of these characters all over again. And it wasn't hard going back.
Jane Clifton had an interesting review, sort of a post-mortem review in the Don Post this week. She got quite deep on it as to what it was, what the secret of Outrageous' success was.
Jane's like that. She's much deeper than I am.
Yeah, well, I
just nod and go, okay.
I read it and I went, oh, really? Okay, is that why it was so successful? I just thought it was, you know, good writing. But she points to the fact that the characters in Outrageous represent a certain getting on with stuff regardless of the what's going on around you, just that Kiwi spirit. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can't give enough raps to Jane, and I wish more television was thought about as much as Jane thinks about it when she writes. But I thoroughly agreed that we're the battler spirit.
Do you sit down there, though, when you create the series, and are you going, what am I trying to say? What's the underlying theme here? Or do you just go,
here's some
characters, here's some stuff that happens, and, you know?
You kind of... When you're first thinking about it, I mean, when we launched Outrageous all those years ago, we did talk about big themes. We did talk about how in this world it is, you know, people can struggle and struggle and struggle legally and get nowhere. And if you just broke the rules, if you just bent the rules, you know, you might get there better. But at what payoff? You know, so we talked when you're starting out, you do talk big theme. But if you're doing that as you're going along, I think you're being counterintuitive in a way. The characters have to take over and let you, you know, go. Well, we talk big theme dramatically. We talk about that, but not in terms of the underlying social meanings, no.
I wonder, when you reach a conclusion in a series like Outrageous Fortune, those thoughts about themes come back. And just thinking about the conclusion itself, it was a fairly neat conclusion. How mindful were you of presenting a resolution rather than leaving threads dangling as some other high-profile shows have done?
Well, just wind back in time. Normally, I mean, this is the first television series I've ever been involved with in New Zealand where we have chosen to end it. Normally you find out about it by being ignored, no one returning your phone calls, and then word filters through that no, we're not going to do another season. So when we first realised that it was in our wherewithal to end it, we went through a kind of an interesting process. Firstly, when are we going to end it? Versus fear of unemployment. If we end it, will we never work again? Once we got to about the end of season five, we knew it had to end. It was we made that decision.
Was this before the problems with the actors and the pay disputes and that sort
of
stuff?
Yeah, it kind of was. It had kind of, for several reasons, largely budgetary, and not being able to do what we wanted to do because of the limitations of working in New Zealand. The actor thing was just, I mean, that was kind of the icing on the cake that said, yeah, no, this is getting a bit silly. When we should be enjoying this, we're not.
Did that sour the experience, that towards the, the fact that it did happen in the last season or so?
It soured season five. I'd be totally honest and say that season five was not fun for a lot of people. And the fact that it wasn't fun made, because, I mean, it's not just the writers who decide we're going to end the show. A lot of other people have to decide. All we can say is we don't want to write this for this anymore. And they can go, well, we'll get some new writers. That's the power we have, or not. Mm-hmm. But I think the events of season five made it easier for a whole bunch of people further up the food chain than me to go, okay, yeah, I think it is time. So once we'd realised that we were in that position, we did start thinking about how do you end this thing? And we played with many different options, but in the end, what we wanted was to present Cheryl as a strong woman moving forward, and that the sense that the Wests are out there still causing chaos.
It was a fantastic end, and whilst I saw Robin Malcolm being interviewed this week suggesting that many actors go into what like an actor's prison, where they basically can't work for a while because they're so typecast, I imagine being the writer of a very successful TV show, you've been inundated with offers. So let's talk about your new project for the next few minutes.
Sure.
Tell me.
The Almighty Johnsons, yes. Which... we'll start screening on TV3 next year sometime.
Great. No pressure then.
It's like there are these zebras at the zoo. And they're hanging out and it's cool. And then the zoo introduces a new male zebra from another zoo for, like, breeding purposes. Suddenly all the female zebras are checking out the new zebra, going, check him out. Make love to you,
baby. So I'm a zebra.
In an hour's time.
Yeah.
It came out of a discussion some years ago with the then... commissioning person Bod at TV3, Katerina Denave, about wanting to do a show with a strong male core cast. And so Rachel Lang and I went away and talked about all sorts of things. And we got bored with the usual, when you're doing a guy show, what do? A trucking company, they're police officers.
Lots of beer.
Beer, stuff like that. And then one day we're sitting around kind of struggling and we went, it'd be really crap to be a superhero in this country because, everyone would go, oh, you think you're so special? so we then thought, well, let's stretch things a bit. Let's do superheroes that aren't so super. They're kind of just Kiwi guys who happen to have this thing. So we hit upon the concept, liberally stealing from... my family's kind of Scandinavian heritage of Norse gods, that New Zealand is like a kind of sanctuary for the Norse gods, and they all settled in Central Hawke's Bay. And
so does it sort of have that Hancock-y sort of, slightly downtrodden superhero kind of vibe to it?
Oh, no. It's not. I mean, Hancock was very, very, very downtrodden. These people are good. Again, I mean, if it shares one thing with Outrageous, they're good Kiwi battlers, They, in their own way, they want to succeed, and the whole series is about their quest to succeed.
If Outrageous had budgetary issues, how do you do a superhero series?
Well,
I'm thinking of because, Hero. I imagine the Hero's budget, for example, was a little bit higher.
Staggeringly, we did have to kind of juggle it very carefully. We did get a bit more money because of there is some special effects components, but they're subtle special effects. They're not things blowing up. They're not that kind of stuff. It's really is a series about guys looking for for love, for the right woman. So it's really, again, about family.
Surprise.
Okay, what the is going on?
We'll see. You never talk to anyone about this. You got it?
You haven't even told your wife.
We're serial monogamists.
Everyone thinks that I'm a because I sleep with your brothers.
You sleep with my brothers?
Legend.
Doesn't involve, like, dragons and shit, does it?
It was kind of porno. Not that I watch porn, you understand.
How porno?
Very. Up to a point.
It's a fairly risky-sounding premise for a commercial network to be putting on air. Do you think it could have happened without the success of Outrageous?
No, I don't, actually. Look, the network took a while to come around to this idea because it was, you know, a bit edgy. But they kept, you know, putting a bit more money in, and they'd see a bit more. And in the end, they went, yeah, this is cool. Okay, we get this now. So, yeah, but with that initial trust, I don't think we would ever have gotten without, you know, coming off the back of Outrageous.
Well, we hope that goes very well for you. Thank you for the last 6 years of Outrageous. It's been fantastic.
Absolutely. Oh, it's a pleasure, and thank you. Thank you for watching. It's what makes it special.
That's James Griffin, and keep an eye out for his new show, The Almighty Johnsons, starting in the new year on TV3. After the break, SAFE campaign director Elliot Pryor and American Jewish author Anna Boltzer.